Court is now in session.
Where are we recording from?
Right here.
Oh, okay. Hear ye, hear ye. I'm Leanna.
I'm John.
This is the Court of Jibber Jabber. Great, great content.
Good stuff.
Nice work. Okay. What are we up to?
All right. You tell me. Okay, so what's your show? What's this show all about?
The show is about you and me. And our love of jibber-jabbering with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And basically shooting the poop. We had this whole long discussion about if this is going to be a clean podcast. And I said, a clean or explicit. And I said, well, it's going to be dirty, but it's not going to be filthy. And then I said, I would like the ability to throw the occasional F-bomb should the situation warrant it. And you said, no, censor yourself. Would you want your children listening to this?
I think if you mark the podcast clean, then people expect it to be clean. So
I understand that, but I want to be able to use my... Okay, that's fine. Is this too squeaky? Oh, sorry. Okay, that's fine. This is a podcast of us jibber-jabbering, and our, like, more than half our lives have been spent together. And we just have a very... finely tuned jibber jabber.
So how's that help out anybody else?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we also have a real interest in mindfulness and, you know, spreading love and
goodness.
I have always believed, and I believe, you know, I'm a nurse, and I believe that the happier people are, the better the world will be. So part of my job as my job as a person is to spread that kindness. And, you know, in the last few weeks, we've really been reading a lot and watching a lot of podcasts or videos and listening to a lot of podcasts about basically that, the goodness within us all, or some people would call God.
Oh, interesting. Speak more about that. I didn't know.
Well, first of all,
God.
I said some people. I didn't say I would call it God.
Okay, that's fine.
First of all, let's talk about our new bed.
Okay, the bed is nice. And beds can go up now. Your head can go up and the legs can go up.
It's true.
That's nice.
That's all you got to say about it? This has been like a huge part of our lives for the last like month, listening to you go on and on about your need for a new bed, new mattress, and how it's your quality of life has been impacted. And that's all you got to say about it? Head can go up, head can go down?
I have nothing else. I have no complaints.
Okay, so but let's talk about why we got a new bed. Why did we get a new bed?
Because my cheese all blocked.
Because your hypochondriac little self diagnosed yourself with badness. Because of a mattress that was totally fine.
It was not fine. It was so old, and it was from
it was 3 years ago.
Bed in a box.
It was 3 years old.
My
not even three.
All squished.
I don't know. You're trying to corkscrew yourself into the bed. You're literally okay. Like your spine is at like a 45-degree angle. Yeah, of course your side was messed up. You're going to mess up this one too because you're literally corkscrewing your shoulder into the bed. And then wondering why you wake up and you're in pain and your back hurts.
Okay, so how do I mean, that's just how I've been falling asleep forever, and that's how I...
Well, now you're like, old. You can't corkscrew anymore.
So I've been trying to fall asleep on my back or on my side, but I wake up with, like, the worst pain, especially on that bed, so...
Well, okay, first, let's be clear. You haven't even spent a night on this bed.
No.
So you don't know how you're... Oh, you're choking kids? You just... headlocked him so hard.
Poor kitty.
John just opened a water bottle like on our cat's neck. And our poor 10-year-old cat was like silently screaming because the airway was collapsed. Oh my God. Okay. I'm saying. What was I saying?
You were complaining about our new bed.
I wasn't complaining about it. I'm just saying I don't know if the new bed is going to fix what is something that's really within you.
Okay, well,
Oh, you were asking how you can how you should fall asleep. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that.
Okay, so what's really the problem here? Let's get to the core of the issue. We read The Untethered Soul.
Oh, that's the problem.
Is that what you think is?
No. I think this is a real, actual issue. It's not like a mindfulness. Not that mindfulness isn't real, but like, I feel like you have bad sleep habits. Mm-hmm. I feel like you maybe like stay up too late and you're at your desk hunched over coding and programming, and then you come and collapse into bed and then try to corkscrew yourself into bed, and then you're like, why does it hurt? I don't understand. I've just had bad, terrible hunchback posture for 16 hours, and then I try to corkscrew myself into this bed. Like, my side of the bed is perfectly fine, and then towards the end you tried to like sleep like on top of me, saying that my side was better. But I'm like, of course my side is better, because I'm sleeping on it like a normal person, not like some sort of like underground animal trying to burrow.
I was sleeping towards the middle of the bed instead of all the way over on my side of the bed.
Well, right.
That really upset our firstborn. Likes to crawl into bed next to mom.
Our firstborn got real mad when he found out his spot in the middle of the bed next to me was taken. So and then he woke up.
He woke his sister up.
He woke his little sister up, and they like had a rave. And they had we just all had a terrible day, because two kids who don't sleep just makes for a bad time.
Why'd you wake your sister up? Well, I was just so mad at you. Okay.
All right. This makes lots of sense. Good. Okay. So you should fall asleep. Well, okay. I think this, maybe this does start with you. Maybe, you know, within you.
It starts and ends with me.
Well, yes. Everything is just our observations, as we've learned, which is a very interesting topic, which we should touch on. But my point is I think you need a bedtime routine. Oh, the fly.
Oh, it was being so gentle.
Oh my gosh. If you hear a buzzing sound, it may or may not be John's personal massager, but there's definitely a huge horse fly in this room that we can't get out. Anywho, no, wait, let me finish what I'm saying.
Get down.
We have a menagerie in our room. This is our...
Get down, dogs.
Our dog, Kiwi. Don't, get off. Okay, thank you. Okay, so I think you need a bedtime routine. You need to tell
Teeth. PJs.
Story and song and off to bed. Good night, Daniel Tiger. Anywho, my point is, you can't just like collapse into bed from, you know, being in your office and doing whatever the hell it is you do in there.
It ain't work.
What?
I said it ain't work.
Well, you're supposed to be working. Anywho, so you need a bedtime routine, right?
Yeah.
You need to maybe do some nice relaxing stretching. Tell yourself, tell your body that you're getting into bed, that you're relaxing. Imagine yourself in bed. Imagine yourself in a great position. Feel your spine in an ergonomically non-terrible position. I don't know what that is, but you've got to find it. And you get into bed with intention of sleeping and healing your body.
The intention of healing. I love it.
Yeah. That's your bedtime routine now.
Well, let's talk more about the intention of healing.
Okay.
Because mindfulness and health has become a big thing.
That's true. I'm actually writing a paper right now on non-pharmacologic methods of post-op pain management. And my focus is on guided imagery.
Nice.
Guided imagery of basically, you know, I'm in anesthesia school. And I once had someone tell me 90% of anesthesia is how you make someone feel when they go to sleep. Whoa. And I have kind of incorporated that into my practice, and it's true. You make someone laugh and giggle and have fun as they're going off to sleep. They wake up and they're super happy. They complain less of pain. Of course, it's anecdotal. So my job right now is to kind of have evidence to support that and convince my colleagues to incorporate that practice into their practice.
You should definitely talk about the spirit realm that
Oh yeah, I'm so definitely gonna creep. I'm definitely gonna bring that up.
What's that?
In a professional setting.
Esther and Jerry Hicks.
Oh yeah, yeah. Esther and Jerry Hicks. You know, I do really.
Your soul goes off.
Yes, absolutely. So
what did they say?
I'd have to find.
But just like the general.
Okay, well, I'm going to do a terrible job. Can you be quiet and let me finish? You're asking me a question. You're not letting me answer it. Okay. Yes.
Nothing.
What? Say it.
Please continue.
Okay. I'm going to do a terrible job and, you know, I can find the passage. But basically, I was reading Money and the Law of Attraction, which is written by, I'm not 100%,
Jerry.
I know who is on the jacket, but when I read the book, there's someone,
Abraham
involved. I don't know where he comes in or if it's a he, and that's, I don't know. I'm not 100% sure on that, but you know, I just roll with it. I really enjoy all these ideas and stuff. Anywho, so okay, I need you to stop doing whatever it is you're doing.
Okay. Moving.
Fine. You gotta stop.
Done.
Okay. You're corkscrewing. This is how you ruin your side of the bed. You're corkscrewing into the bed.
Almost as if I can't sit still. It's almost as if I have symptoms of ADHD. Continue.
Okay. So they, which I believe is Esther and Abraham is the name given to the spiritual universal energy.
And Jerry's the side man.
Jerry's her husband who like talks to Abraham through Esther. I don't know, but Esther, yeah, he's the hype man. Esther and Abraham have a thing going on in the spiritual realm, and then Esther and Jerry have a thing going on in this physical world.
Got it.
And
that's hot.
It's pretty hot. Anyway, so this book said, and I'm not sure which of these characters said it, but when you go off to sleep at night, you leave the physical realm and you go to your you go to the energy realm, mm-hmm. and you can realign yourself with the vibration that you want to be aligned with, essentially. Nice. Like, so if you're attracting things that you don't want to attract during the day, at the end of the day, when you go to sleep, if you with intention, you realign your energy with the energy that you want to attract while you're asleep.
I find that
you basically leave this physical realm.
I find it interesting, as like abstract as that may sound, that how that, you know, could potentially fit in with your anesthesia practice.
Absolutely. Because what have I always told you? Everything is about
how you make people feel.
Yeah. Everything is about how you make people feel. I mean, if I were to send you off to sleep, like say I came out into pre-op and I was like kind of really grumpy and acted like I didn't really care about you.
My heart chakra was closed.
Like imagine that. Like would you go into surgery feeling confident or would you be very anxious?
I would be anxious.
Well, you'd be anxious no matter what because you're you. But you would be anxious. So say this person who you have a real opportunity to, you have a real opportunity to create their experience, right?
Yeah.
So I go out into pre-op and I interview them and I talk to them and I am competent. I make them competent in me and I make them competent in what's going to happen to them, that we're going to take very good care of them. As I'm sending people off to sleep and they're kind of like, I'm like, oh, take a big deep breath. We're just filling your lungs with air. We're just going to take such good care of you. You're going to wake up feeling happy and comfortable. Like I say these things to people as they go off to sleep.
You don't ever incorporate vulnerability into your practice. Like, you know, I'm a student. I'm really only done this a few times.
No, but I do acknowledge their vulnerability. Which is what the point I was going to make is that I want to make them as comfortable as possible and alleviate as much anxiety as possible, knowing full well this is a very anxious position for them to be in. They are 100% relying on me and the other surgical team, but they are 100% relying on me to keep them pain-free, to keep them unconscious during the procedure, because no one wants to wake up during anesthesia. And to have them wake up comfortable. So all of these things to facilitate a successful surgery. So I want to send them off to sleep happy because I want them to wake up happy. So, you know, when you go to sleep, right? Like just on your normal day to day, when you go to sleep and you're in a terrible mood, like how do you wake up the next morning? Or do you have a hard time going to sleep? Do you know what I mean? Like that stays with you. I believe it's totally stays with you.
Yeah.
And it kind of bounces around in your neurons up in there. And it's
like
still,
when we fight right before bed.
Yeah. And I wake up and I'm still pissed at you. And I'm like, this guy still, what did I, why? You know what I mean?
I do.
So.
I hear it.
You know, people, scientists, researchers don't 100% know why we sleep. We know we need the restorative process. We know we need rest, but we don't know why. You know, maybe we leave the physical realm and go to the energy realm.
It's got to do with energy, which is a word that seems to be a catch-all for more and more stuff that, I mean, is just unexplainable, but it's obviously there. It's
right.
Unexplainable by physical science, but it's like obviously happening.
It's right? Inexplicable by current scientific methodology.
Right.
But clearly,
something we can't see or measure yet.
Right. I mean, but clearly you can't tell me that we are, as human beings, we're not worthy of acceptance and love, despite what people's actions are. And I think Brené Brown said something really interesting on, what's his name?
Russell Brand.
On Russell Brand's podcast about,
Under the Skin.
Under the Skin,
this
yeah.
This is his podcast, yeah.
Mm-hmm. On Luminary, we don't get paid for this. about, you know, accepting somebody and seeing God in somebody while not accepting their actions. And she talks about people who are very compassionate who also have boundaries of steel, which has really been resonating a lot with me today. I've just been thinking about it a lot. Boundaries of steel allows you to have that compassion. And then you also, you always hear, not always, but you know, you hear people, Christians say the phrase, love the sinner, not the sin. So I think when I think about religion, it's a lot of religion is just an allegory to explain the generally inexplicable.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Feel like I'm talking a lot here and I'd like for you to jump in instead of corkscrewing yourself into bed.
And no, I'm trying to prompt you because you're a good orator and you have a certified mastermind. Certified Brixton Higgs mastermind.
Brixton Higgs? Briggs Myers?
Yes.
Braxton Hicks Braxton are the Higgs. False contractions that women have before they go into labor.
No, you're Briggs Myers mastermind, you know, and so you're into, and you're an empath, a natural empath. Your intuition is on point. So I just wanted to be a sounding board for a minute, like let you get a couple things out.
Cool. I'd like for you to get a couple things out.
Like what? What do you want?
I don't know. I want to stop talking. I want you to talk now.
Okay. Well, it's been great. Thanks for joining us. No. Wow, putting me on the spot. I thought you were doing great. Yeah, this whole
no gibber jabbering. It was just gibber without jabber. You're over there corkscrewing yourself into bed.
I'm not corkscrewing. There's no corkscrewing. People can't.
Do you hear this?
That.
Do you hear this? This is just like bed
that's
movement.
You.
Yeah, that's what you were doing.
It's you.
It's you.
You smell like Raid.
I don't smell like Raid. Oh, okay. Talk to me about your issues around smell and why it sends
smell.
You into a freaking rage.
What do you mean? What are you talking about? I mean, tell me more. Smell? Issues around smell? Rage?
Yeah. Chicken?
What do you mean chicken? That was about health. That was about just... What do you want to say?
I don't want to say anything. I want you to talk about... Why you're like, the house smells like chicken. The room smells like Raid.
I don't know what you want me to say. I have nothing to say about that.
Oh, okay. What would you like to say?
Nothing. I don't have anything to say. This has been a good episode. I'm glad to get a couple things out.
That's how you're going to end this? You're ending it? You have nothing to say?
Okay, shall we go to the outline?
Yes, we have an outline.
All right, John is using a massage tool that's actually a sexy vibrator, and he's using it as a massage tool.
He's actually using it as a personal massager.
Where is it?
It's right next to you. It's right next to you.
It's got all these.
He's got a suspected thoracic nerve impingement, and this is part of the reason why we have a new mattress. And John is using a vibrator as a personal massager. Actually, what it's advertised for.
Oh man, it really feels good. My rib cage feels all jammed up.
I really think it's just his energies are unaligned.
Energy is blocked.
He needs to fix his vibration. He now
needs to raise it.
Needs to raise his vibration.
That's cool. I remember buying this vibrator on my birthday, or to come for
Does
my
this,
birthday.
Can we have this in a clean podcast?
This personal massager. I remember working this person. No.
No.
One personal massager, thinking that we would have some fun times with it, but that never.
That never?
Once. That happened once.
Oh my gosh. I take issue with your numeric estimation.
I mean, with this, anyway. It's not specific.
I used it on my sinuses once.
It's great. It's an awesome personal massage tool.
It like literally just like bebopped all the stuff out of my sinuses. It was pretty cool.
That's awesome. It's called Lulu 7 Plus. I did a lot of research.
It's the best personal massager you can get in its price range.
In its price range. Very reasonably priced.
Very reasonably priced.
Waterproof.
Oh, yes. That's all we'll say about that.
That was the first thing on the thing. Okay, we got a new bed. That's been covered. And then we were going to talk about tarot cards. Do you want to talk about tarot cards?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, what are tarot cards? They're like a deck of playing cards.
Yeah, I know what they are.
Hard transition. First word from our sponsor.
Boom. Boom. What are tarot cards? Why don't you tell me what tarot cards are?
Tarot cards are these things that you get in an app.
Tarot cards are basically a deck of cards that have archetypal people and situations on them with loads of symbolism that as you pull them up and in relation to in context kind of give you an idea of how to think about a situation.
The cards that kind of tell a story, right?
They tell a story. They tell a story of the fool, which is basically you and me kind of jaunting through life, and the symbolism on the cards and what the group or suits means kind of, it's just a way of igniting your intuition. It's not a psychic thing. It doesn't tell the future. It's not creepy. Yeah. It's just like, hey, this is how we can look at this situation in a from a different angle. Like maybe you're stuck and you just like don't know what to do. Like, hey, have you thought about maybe being more careful around a person who you don't know very well? You know, like,
yeah, you put your energy into it, your energy, which is whatever that is. And then you do different.
Yeah. Why don't you look
spreads
at our notes?
Yeah. Well, you got spreads, right? So like, maybe you just want to do a daily draw and you pick one card a day and just kind of that gives you some kind of maybe significant guidance for that day. I've bought a couple decks and I've only done two readings, but they both said kind of something that resonated with me and made me think about how I was going to act. One was the
Magician,
the Emperor card or something like that, or whatever it was. That was like the High Priest, something like that. And it was like, you need to be a father figure. So really,
oh yeah, that's real.
I'm being helping my kids out and not stressing out about, you know, trying to develop software and just push myself harder when there's just so much to be done with the kids and the family right now. So I allowed myself, gave myself permission to focus on that after doing that reading for myself, which I thought was cool. And then they got the magician card, yeah, for that other reading you were talking about. It's like, all right, you got this. It's time to make some really cool software. So now I'm ready. I'm pumped up and fired up. And I got all the tools I need. So the magician card's interesting because it has all the suits on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the
Well, let's go over like what is in a tarot deck.
Okay, tarot cards are 78 cards, and they're divided into two groups. There's the major arcana, and those are the most significant cards. They signify maybe life events. Arcana means secret, right? And so you use these cards to kind of uncover secrets. It's what they've been traditionally used for. And the other group are minor arcana, which are a bunch of cards that are split into four groups. You'll have like, you know, the Ace of Pentacles, the Four of Swords, and they all kind of are a little bit more detailed, a little bit more nuanced meanings behind those that fall into kind of more generalized categories that correspond to each of the suits. You know, maybe the cups, for instance, the cups are a water suit, and those relate to emotions and relationships. And you've got your pentacles, which are
so the minor arcana are divided into suits.
The minor arcana are divided into suits, yes.
Okay.
And the major arcana, no. No suits.
No suits. So those are just like represent major life events, that's the major arcana.
Right. They tell the story of the fool.
The fool's journey. The fool's through journey. Life.
Right. And the fool is you or I, right?
Right. Or the seeker.
The seeker. Okay. Right. The seeker of the knowledge. Right. You're asking the cards. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And there it goes from the fool, number 0, to number 21, which is the world.
Cool. Okay. So then the minor arcana are, it depends on what you read, but the minor arcana are more the day-to-day minor decisions and trials and tribulations that a person will go through. And those are divided into suits. So cups, wands, swords, and pentacles. Right?
Right.
Okay. And then each of those suits has 10 numerical cards, and that has their own imagery and symbolism in a.
Right. Each suit has actually 14 cards, the ace to 10.
Oh, and then they have court cards.
And they have court.
Okay. So that's some.
Pages, knights, queens, and kings are the court cards.
Right. Yeah. So depending on what you read, some books say that the, tarot deck is divided into three groups: major arcana, minor arcana, and court cards. And then others say it's two groups: major arcana, minor arcana, which include the court cards. So
cool.
Okay.
How do you use tarot cards? You use rituals?
Right. So I had a couple excerpts from Michelle T's Modern Tarot. Just like the first 10 pages of the introduction, I just felt were really explained really well how I feel about the tarot.
Yeah, it's very accessible too.
Super accessible. I don't feel like she's trying to sell some sort of new age woo-woo. She's just like, hey, this has helped me in this way, and this is why I think it would help you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's see. Where did it go? Tarot speaks to our intuition, to our guts. More and more scientific research points to the right-on power of our guts to make quick, intuitive, and correct decisions. So what it does is, through the use of vibrant, detailed imagery, engage my creativity and intuition and allow me to see a story, a pattern, and use that to help the seeker make sense of where they're at and where they're headed. It's more like a really good therapy session with a preternaturally insightful therapist. And then she, couple sentences down later, she says, they hold mysteries, but we hold mysteries too. And it's the coming together that creates the helpful uncanny, which is like, I love that. Helpful uncanny. It's like, how many times have you been like, oh my gosh, it's so like, what a small world. Or like, I can't believe that happened. It's like the helpful uncanny. I love that. I love that.
That's cool.
Phrasing of it.
Well, yeah. And like when you get the cards and you're like, oh wow, that's so, I never would have, considered my situation or this situation in that light, but you know what, it actually makes sense, and then you change your behaviors and your life actually can and will change if you put your intention and your energy into the cards.
Yeah. And she talks about energy, and she's like, I know I keep talking about energy, and no one, I don't have a good explanation for or definition of what energy is, but energy is just energy, and we can't explain it, essentially. Like, what did she say? Let me find that. It's pretty funny. Basically, so what does energy even mean? I like to think of it as an invisible force or vibration that emanates from animate objects and energizes the inanimate. We are all trading energy all the time.
Interesting.
Yeah, I really like that a lot. And then it's funny because, like, in the very, very beginning of the introduction, she's like, but my teenage reverence is tempered with the fact that some of the cards are made, say, in a game factory. So it's like, really, it doesn't matter. They can come from anywhere. It really matters the energy we give it.
Right.
Like, I just
like anything. If you just decide to be mindful about it, it's really just a tool for channeling your energy.
That's exactly it. A tool for channeling your intuition, a tool for manifesting your energy, or for guiding your energy for manifestation, or use, you know, like, it's just all this like trading of energy. I just really liked her very easy explanation of it. And then another thing, this is all from the introduction. This is like in the first 14 pages.
I think all the rest of it just goes into card by card.
Exactly.
Which is cool, but I wish there was a whole book just like the introduction.
Yeah, I kind of just want to hang out with this lady. Maybe she will one day be on the Court of Jibber Jabber. That would be amazing. Okay, so then she talks about we should also talk about how you thought, you know, now that I'm saying she a lot, like, I don't really know this woman's preferred pronouns.
True.
And we should talk about why that even comes into conversation.
Oh, it's just confusing.
Hold on. We'll get there. Okay. So then she talks about rituals and the importance of rituals and why rituals are important. So I'll just read this passage. Okay. These subtler parts of ourselves are so easily overrun by rational thought and the very unmagical demands of daily life that it's like we need to trick that part of our mind into action, lure it out with beauty and intentions. Just as the Zen Buddhists trigger mindfulness in themselves by entering and exiting meditation spaces in deliberately fussy ways.
That's real. That resonated with me too when I read it, because I was just starting to meditate after hearing and reading a little bit of The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer, and kind of understanding why someone would actually take the time to meditate for the first time in my life. And as I was reading that, I was like, oh, that's super fascinating. Like, the entering into meditation spaces in deliberately fussy ways to kind of almost like push yourself in one direction so far intentionally that when you can kind of like get that quick jump start as you snap back into what you're trying to do, you know, say you're stumbling in a fussy way. Like, you're like, oh, I'm so frustrated right now. I'm so fussy. You sit down and you're like, now I'm at peace. And it's like, you get to go from being so fussy to.
So it sounds like you were interpreting fussy in a different way than what she actually meant it.
Do go on.
I think she's meaning fussy, or how I read the sentence, or how I read the passage, is that she's reading fussy in like a particularly meticulous and like.
That makes sense.
A ritualistic way. Fussy. Specific. Yes, that's how I interpreted it. Because that fussiness or that ritualisticness or that doing that is what tricks your mind into allowing its energy space, or, you know, the observer to take over and not because she says
rituals. She's talking about rituals.
It's the rituals. Like, why are rituals important? Why do we use rituals? And the first sentence is, these subtler parts of ourselves are so easily overrun by rational thought and the very unmagical demands of daily life. So it's like, to overcome the day-to-day to-do list and errands and things that need to get done, to overcome that part of our mind that is constantly like logging those things and checking off boxes, we need to perform some ritual to invite our intuition to take over.
I like that.
Which goes back into your bedtime routine. You need a bedtime routine to trick your body.
I want to meditate before bed, I think.
Right.
Yeah, first thing in the morning and first thing before bed.
Yeah.
Talk about your bedtime routine with what you learned from the Esther and Jerry Hicks. Something about why you go to bed like with great gratitude is the last thing on your mind.
Oh, this goes into like, where do we go when we sleep? They kind of, in reading all these books, like there's lots of really good parts and a lot of contradiction within books and between books. But like, so they talk about how in one paragraph or one part, they talk about how